My text this morning is 2 Kings 18. It's the story of Hezekiah. I've been going through the book of Isaiah. As I was reading through Isaiah about the story of Hezekiah, it hit me differently than it ever has before. And so I started thinking about it and mulling over the ideas and thought, well, maybe I'll make a Sabbath school program out of this. And then Mark came and asked me if I would do a sermon. And so I just kept expanding and working it. So the Lord has just kept putting thoughts in my mind. I've preached this sermon hundreds of times driving down the road. Too bad you couldn't have been there. It would have probably been better then than now. 2 Kings 18. Now it came to pass in the third year of Hosea, the son of Eliam, king of Israel, Hosea, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Zedekiah. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father David had done. And then moving down to verse 5, he trusted in the Lord God of Israel, so that after him was none like him among the kings of Judah, nor who were before him. For he held fast to the Lord. He did not depart from following him, but kept his commandments, which the Lord had commanded Moses. The Lord was with him. He prospered wherever he went, and he rebelled against the king of Assyria and did not serve him. Now that's important, that he rebelled against the king of Assyria, because the king of Assyria was attacking him. Well, then we jump ahead 14 years. There are things in our lives that are pivotal moments. And as I was going through this, I was thinking of some pivotal moments in my life, like the time when I got a letter from the United States government that said Uncle Sam couldn't fight the Vietnam War without me. And my life changed at that moment. From then on, my life was never the same. When I left home, I never came back to live in my parents' house. And so it was a very pivotal moment. And this was such a pivotal moment in Hezekiah's life. We're going to chapter 20 now of 2 Kings. Now, this is a little bit of history. Hezekiah decided not to pay tribute to Assyria. So Assyria finally came and they started attacking Judah and trying to destroy the kingdom, trying to get money out of them. And so Hezekiah gave in and took all the gold and silver out of the temple and gave it to the king of Assyria to try to appease him, but they kept bugging him and working on him and trying to get him to give more tribute and actually surrender to him. Chapter 20, verse 1. In those days, Hezekiah got sick. Now, this is after 14 years of him doing what was right and then the Assyrians attacking and just irritating him. He got sick. Now, it could have been a stress-related thing. We don't know. And Isaiah the prophet, son of Amoz, went to him and said to him, Thus saith the Lord, Set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Now, how would you like it if a prophet of God came to you and says, You're going to die. Set your house in order. The question I had in that was, and I wish that we were in a Sabbath school setting because I would like to get discussion on this, but what does it mean to set your house in order? As I was thinking about that, I remembered some friends of ours that were, well, we knew them in California, and then we went to Michigan, and they went to Seattle, and anyway, we kept corresponding with them. It was John and Carol. John was diagnosed with a terminal lung illness. So what did he do? How did he prepare? How did he get his house in order? Well, he sold his business that he had up there, sold the house. The doctor told him to move closer to the coast so he'd have a little cleaner air to breathe. So they moved over to Lincoln City. He bought his wife and grandson a house over there and prepared to die, which he did a few years ago. But he did the best he could to get his house in order. What are some of the steps that we would take to get our house in order, to prepare ourselves if we knew that we were going to die. Every one of us is terminal. We all got this death sentence hanging over our heads. When that date, when Hezekiah was told, okay, you are going to die, you're not going to recover from this, what went through his mind? How did he respond? Well, we go on to verse 2 and 3. Then he turned his face toward the wall and prayed to the Lord, saying, remember now, O Lord, I pray, how I have walked before you in truth and with a loyal heart, and have done what was good in your sight. And Hezekiah wept bitterly. What would your response be to that? Is this a correct response? Do you relate to that? Should he have said, okay, Lord, if you say I'm going to die, then I will just turn over and I will die, and that's it. What kind of response does God expect us to have when we are presented with this kind of news? This story is recorded in three different places, and the prayer is all the same. There's no pleading with God for healing or anything else. It is, okay, Lord, you know what I've done. You know I have served, I have tried to live for you. And you kind of left it at that. But yet the response in verse 4, and it happened before Isaiah had gone out into the middle court that the word of the Lord came to him, saying, return and tell Hezekiah, the leader of my people, thus saith the Lord, the God of David, your father, I have heard your prayer. I have seen your tears. Surely I will heal you. On the third day you shall go up to the house of the Lord. Now, that seems like a very straightforward answer to prayer, doesn't it? But yet, we see in Hezekiah's life that it was not enough for him. He had to have a sign. He asked the Lord for a sign. I forgot to tell you the story that I meant to put in before that. A woman that I heard on the radio this past week, a few years ago, was diagnosed with breast cancer. She did all the chemo, the surgery, everything, and was healed. A lot of prayer, a lot of really going to the Lord, begging the Lord for life. And a couple of years later, her husband was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And after a month or so of praying about that, they found out it was a misdiagnosis. And then her son was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. So then they started praying about that, just one thing right after another. And it seemed like if they would get down on their knees and really plead with the Lord, that it would change the outcome of the situation. Is that what God expects of us? Does he expect us to really get down and personal with him and draw close to him in these different situations? I believe that he does. I believe that God is putting these things in our path to test us, to see if we are the kind of people that are safe to save. And in thinking about this, do you remember the business meeting that we had when we first found out about the damage in the church, how we were back there brainstorming, discussing what we should do and expanding the idea, okay, let's, what about the sanctuary? And I kept saying, well, no, let's just do the back part of the church and leave the front for later so that we can have some place to put the pews and do it slow and gently. Oh no, there was people here with the faith and the vision to do the whole thing at once. And now we're getting to enjoy the fruit of that. This was a pivotal moment in the life of this church. This church will never be the same as it was before that pipe broke. I believe that sincerely. After Hezekiah was healed, the Lord promised him 15 more years. What would it be like to have somebody come and tell you, okay, you are guaranteed you're going to live 15 more years? What would you do? Would you go out and start bungee jumping or putting your life at risk and doing different things that were, what would you do with the rest of your life? This is things I was thinking about. Hezekiah's response to this was not something that I would think would be a good thing. When I started out, Hezekiah was a man that was serving the Lord, that was doing what God had asked him to do. It said that he lived like his father David. He was doing right. He was living a good life. And then after he was given this test, this ultimatum. Do you remember that another government sent people to congratulate him? I'll read this here from Prophets and Kings, page 344. In the fertile valley of the Tigris and Euphrates, there dwelt an ancient race which, though at the time subject to Assyria, was determined to rule the world. Among its people were wise men who gave much attention to the study of astronomy. And when they noticed that the shadow on the sundial had been turned back 10 degrees, they marveled greatly. The king, I never could pronounce it, Meredoban, upon learning of that miracle that had been wrought as a sign to the king of Judah that the God of heaven had granted him a new lease on life, sent ambassadors to Hezekiah to congratulate him on his recovery. And here's the key thought, and to learn, if possible, more of the God who was able to perform such a great wonder. The visit of these messengers from the ruler of the faraway land gave Hezekiah an opportunity to extol the living God. How easy it would have been for him to tell them of God, the upholder of all created things, through whose favor his own life had been spared. And when all other hope had fled, what momentous transformation might have taken place in these seekers of truth from the plains of Chaldea. It led to acknowledge the supreme sovereignty of a living God. If he had told them of the God of his healing, the whole history of that nation might have been changed. But he chose not to do that. But pride and vanity took possession of Hezekiah's heart. And in self-exaltation, he laid open to covetous eyes the treasures with which God had enriched him. The king showed them the house of all his precious things, the silver and the gold and the spices and the precious ointments, and all the house of his armor, and all that was found in his treasury. There was nothing in his house, nor all his dominion, that Hezekiah showed them not. Not to glorify God did he do this, but to exalt self in the eyes of the foreign princes. He chose to take the opportunity that God had given him. Now, this was not a sign that Hezekiah was given that was just for him alone. It was a worldwide sign. Everybody in the world knew that happened, that was paying attention. And he chose to waste that opportunity. Isaiah came to him and he said, who came here? Who was visiting here? And what did you show them? And he told them, and Isaiah told them what was going to happen, that they were going to come and take possession of the land and take his children captive. And he says, in my paraphrase, oh well, at least there'll be peace in my life because God promised me 15 years of peace. And so whatever happens to anybody after I'm gone, so what? It's no big deal. It's my life is going to be safe. What kind of an attitude is that? And we see that same attitude because the next king after him was Manasseh. In my opinion, the worst king that Judah ever had, sacrificing his own children to these foreign gods. And he was 12 years old when he became king. So he was born during this 15 years that Hezekiah had. Now, if you knew that you had 15 years to live, wouldn't you be training your children to be the best ruler, the best person to fill that job of anybody that's ever had that job in history? But he blew it again. And you think, okay, Lord, now forgive me for doing this, but the Lord knew what was going to happen. So why did he give him 15 years if he knew what the results were going to be? I couldn't grasp why the Lord allowed that, but it was in his timing. The Lord has blessed our church. I'm trying to keep all these thoughts together. The Lord has blessed our church. What are we going to do with this? People in the community come up to me and they say, wow, they're sure doing a lot of work on your church. What are you doing with that? I said, well, come on by and take a look sometime. And if they come in the door and they see the beautiful sanctuary and all the work that's been done, are they going to see the sanctuary or are they going to see the God of our sanctuary? while I was thinking about this, I was driving one morning, and whatever was on the radio I didn't particularly care for, so I reached over and hit a button, and I hit a country western button. I don't usually listen to country western music, but there was a song on there by Tim McGraw that was called Live Like You Were Dying. And so that's kind of where I got the title for my talk this morning. And it's written in song lyrics, so it's really hard to read, but I'm going to do my best here. I was in my early 40s with a lot of life before me when a moment came that stopped me on a dime. I spent most of the next days looking at the x-rays, talking about options, talking about sweet dimes. I asked him when it sank in what this might really be the real end. How's it hit you when you get this kind of news? Man, what did you do? I went skydiving. I went Rocky Mountain climbing. I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Blue Man Chew. I loved deeper. I spoke sweeter. I gave forgiveness I'd been denying. Someday I hope you live like you were dying. I was finally the husband that most of the time I wasn't. And I became a friend would like to have. He went fishing and he did the things that were important, but yet he was so busy doing other things that he missed out on the opportunities to live life to the fullest. I didn't really expect to get a message like that from a country western station. It was really a powerful message to me. As we're thinking about this, there's a verse that I've got written in the front of my Bible. It's taken also from Prophets and Kings, page 486. True success in any line of work is not the result of chance or accident or destiny. It is the outworking of God's providence, the reward of faith and discretion, of virtue and perseverance. Fine mental qualities and high moral tone are not the result of an accident. And this is what I've covered in my Bible. God gives opportunities. Success depends upon the use made of them. And that's where we're all at. Every day, every minute that we have is an opportunity from God. And what are we going to do with that opportunity? How are we going to live our lives? Each one of us needs to think about that. The opportunities that God gives us, the people that we meet, the ones we work with, the ones we pass on the street, are opportunities. What is going to be our response to those opportunities? And if we realize that we are all terminal, that we are all here for just a short time, we should make the most of every minute that we have on this earth. Shall we bow our heads for prayer? Loving Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this Sabbath day. Thank you for this beautiful sanctuary, for all the work that's been done on it. Thank you for your blessings, Lord. And in all that we do, everything we say and think, Lord, may we glorify your name. Amen.